Welcome to Mad Coast Radio, diligent dialogue, dismantling crazy, one conversation at a time. Mad Coast Radio aims to expand the public conversation on all things mental and behavioral health related. I'm your host, Susie DeKnight, mental health professional and consumer. Hello, welcome to Mad Coast Radio. I'm your host, Susie DeKnight. My guest today is Drew Herzig. Drew is a member of the local city council here in Astoria, Oregon, and contributes to his community in countless other ways that I'm going to let him tell you about in just a moment. I invited Drew here today to talk mostly about his work with the Warming Shelter here in Astoria, an organization that serves those affected by homelessness. Homelessness and mental illness are linked. There are statistics that range anywhere from 40% to 90% of those who are living on the street are diagnosed with a mental illness. And we know that one of the negative side effects of the movement to deinstitutionalize, meaning the work that has been done to reduce the number of people who enter the state psychiatric mental health system, reduce the length of stay in psychiatric hospitals, and increase natural supports for those. One of the side effects has actually been homelessness, that we have this big push to get people out of the hospitals. Well, we get them out of the hospitals, where do they go? If they don't have a family that can support them, if there aren't enough beds, which there aren't in residential homes and centers, or if they can't live on their own, where do they go? Or, if they're not getting the income, if they're not able to get the income they need to pay the rents that are increasing everywhere in this region, where do they go? Well, a lot of people end up on the streets. So the work that Drew is doing is very important and definitely impacts those interested in mental health and mental health services, those living with a mental health diagnosis, mental illness, and all of us in turn, because we're all affected by all of these things. Everything is interconnected in our community. We're a community, and what affects one affects another. Welcome, Drew Herzig.
Hi, Susie.
To Mad Coast Radio. Yeah, thanks for being here.
Thanks for inviting me.
I wonder if you could start just by telling the listening audience a little bit about who you are and what you do here in the community.
I'm Drew Herzig, and I'm on the Astoria City Council. I ran in November of 2012 and got elected, and so I'm at the middle of my fourth year in office. It's a four-year term, and I'm here partly because a couple of years ago I was involved with getting the Astoria Warming Center up and running. And I think that's going to be what we'll be talking about mostly here today.
We are. Tell us a little bit about that story. How did that come to be? Because I know it's a relatively new service offered in the community. Was that just your idea one day? Or
actually, it's partly owing to Terry Wilson of KMUN. He used to be the KMUN representative who came and recorded the city council meetings. And during my first winter in office, which was the 2013 winter, Terry would regularly, at the public comment part of our city council meeting, come up and shake his finger at us and say, "When are you going to open a warming shelter?" That winter was a particularly severe winter. We had quite a lot of snow and freezing and that sort of thing. So Terry was the one who kept saying, "You should open a warming center." And I thought, well, he's right. And so I kept looking around and waiting to see somebody opening a warming center. It didn't seem to be happening. So that spring, I started really looking around town, thinking, like, where can we find a place to do this? Where can we find an empty room, a building that would be usable kind of stuff? And through one of those good fortune, bad fortune things, the Astoria Senior Center was scheduled for reconstruction, renovation kind of thing. So the Senior Center relocated, the building was empty, and then they were told that construction would not start until the following spring. So the building was basically going to sit empty all winter. So I talked to Larry Miller, who's the director of the Senior Center, and said, "Do you think we could use part of the building for a warming center?" Larry deserves a lot of credit. So Terry Wilson was the one who guilt-tripped us into doing something. Larry Miller was the first person I talked to who said, "I think we can do this." And he talked to the Senior Center board, and they said they'd be willing to do that.
Did you experience any resistance to this effort?
Yes, the Astoria police were initially quite dubious about this. They came around when they found that actually during the nights we were open, the use of the emergency room dropped, that the need to arrest people on the street dropped. Basically, getting the homeless off the street takes a lot of the burden off the police and off the medical people kind of thing. So they realized after we were operating the first winter that it actually benefited the community. But initially, they were pretty skeptical about the whole operation. And then we were afraid that we might get some community pushback. But fortunately, the senior center is not in a residential area. We did our best to be good neighbors, to clean up the sidewalk and all that sort of thing, you know, when we operated sort of stuff. So we got much less pushback than I anticipated.
Once you got started and you, I guess I'm curious about what you mentioned, that the shelter actually helped reduce the burden on emergency services such as the hospital and police, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Can you say more about that?
Yes. Well, on the nights we're open, the homeless would come to us for a place to sleep, a warm place to sleep, rather than going to the emergency room, because the emergency room is the only 24/7 place where people could go to get in out of the weather. The bus station closes down, the mini mart, Safeway, that sort of thing. There are places where the homeless do shelter, but there aren't places that are open at 2 a.m. or 3 a.m. or that sort of thing. And if you suddenly realize that your temperature is dropping and it's 2 a.m., that's where are you going to go? Where are you going to go to the emergency room if you don't have a warming center to go to? So, and we were hearing that from people at the hospital, that the burden on them was considerably less on nights when we were open. And for the police, because they weren't having to answer nuisance calls about people who are out on the street or collapsed in an alleyway or that sort of thing, it also lightened the load for them.
Do you know, are there statistics on safety in terms of, like, I know that sometimes for women specifically, living on the streets can be a really unsafe place, and I think that's true for all genders. Do you know anything about how you may have increased safety for folks?
Well, we sure hope we increase safety. It's a very difficult life out there. And I forget the actual statistic, but nationally, I believe homeless women, their chances of being sexually assaulted in their first week on the streets are at least 50%, if not more. It's extremely dangerous for homeless women. First year, I believe we had 10 individual women stayed at the warming center. We created a separate sleeping area. We always had volunteers awake. We never left anything unsupervised. We wanted to make sure it was safe as possible. And for whatever reason, the homeless women in the community, at least some of them, trusted us enough to come and stay with us. So I felt good about that. But it's a very dangerous world out there, both for the men and the women, but particularly for the women. They are extremely vulnerable.
And so you had a successful first winter, and now you've had your second winter.
Yes.
And do you feel that was also a success?
Absolutely. The second winter, we were able to move into the basement of the First United Methodist Church, which is right across the street from the senior center. Their church board looked at it and said, yes, we can do this, and they let us move in, and they've been great partners. We signed a memorandum of understanding with the church that they would let us stay there for 3 years, and they also allowed us to put in a shower and washer and dryers in. And they said, if you're going to be modifying our structure and bringing in this stuff, then we better figure out, it can't be just a one-year thing. So we said 3 years minimum, and as long as they're willing to keep us there, we'd be unless somebody wins the lottery and we can buy our own facility, because what Astoria really needs is a daytime drop-in center as well as a warming center. The homeless, they need a place in the daytime where they can go charge their cell phones, get on the internet, take a shower, do laundry, rest, get counseling, have a locker where they can store their stuff. It's been really interesting, the process of working with the homeless, just with the warming center. We've learned so much about their needs on the streets. And so we know we're only dealing with a very small part of their needs. But the next step would be a daytime drop-in center with lockers for the homeless, so they are not always having their stuff stolen or confiscated or having to stash it under a tree or in a shopping cart or that sort of thing. I mean, a lot of the perception of homelessness is, oh, these people just trash the neighborhood kind of thing. But the fact is that they have to carry everything they've got with them at all times, or if they can't, they have to hide it somewhere. And that creates so much stress and uncertainty in their daily lives that to have a place with lockers and internet access and counseling and all that sort of a full service area would be a huge thing. So anybody who wins the lottery who has a few million dollars to spare, please get in touch and we'll work that out.
Yeah, I hope that happens.
Me too.
Because we know, I mean, you brought up a really good point that we know that if you're living on the street, that's a pretty precarious place to wind up because, you know, how do you get off? Well, you need money. How do you get money? You get a job. How do you get a job if you don't have an address? Do you see that kind of
absolutely.
Experience
absolutely.
Reflected in our local community of people affected by homelessness?
Yes. Now, Clatsop Community Action does provide mailing addresses for the homeless people. If people can go there and sign up, then they can get their mail there. But that still is not the same as having a place of their own. You know, it's just you're on the street. You can just go and pick up your mail. We know some of our guests who are on disability. There's one gentleman I know who says he could afford to rent a place, but he cannot afford the first and last month and the security deposit. That is, there's no way he can do that. And that applies not just to homeless people. I know people in town working, people who cannot afford that first, last month and security deposit. Otherwise, they could get out of their car, that sort of thing. This connects to the lack of affordable housing. It really does, because the lack of affordable housing is driving people into homelessness, not as much here in Astoria, but as we know nationally and Portland, you start to follow the stories and you realize that people are right on the brink. And if they get evicted for some reason, as is happening in gentrification and other places, you can probably not get back into an apartment at the same amount you were paying if you can even find a place, which means you're going to end up, you may be, in a sense, functionally homeless, staying with somebody else, sleeping out of your car, that sort of thing. But more and more people that we think it can't happen to us because I don't have any addictions, I don't have any mental health problems, I don't have any of that sort of thing. But it's like you can end up there too. It's very frightening.
Yeah, a lot of people, I think, believe that if they work hard, you know, if they have a good work ethic, that something like homelessness is far away from their experience. But with the way that rents are rising and the economy is changing, that's not necessarily true. I know I just visited a friend in Portland whose rent went up $800 in the last year. And everywhere you look, there are tents and communities of people affected by homelessness. It's a very serious problem. I'm wondering what does that community look like here in Astoria? Do you know, like, some of the reasons that people are finding themselves living on the street here? Are they people that are coming from other places and more transient, or do you see locals who are from here and just are ending up in that situation?
It's a mixed group kind of thing. There are some of our guests who have lived in Astoria longer than I have, who consider themselves Astoria residents, who talk to me about city issues and say, what's going on with this, what sort of thing like that, and are homeless and have been homeless for years. But they are members of our community. This myth that it's only the transients who are homeless and if we could just run them out of town, we'd be fine kind of thing is a complete myth. And it's an insult to members of our community who find themselves unhoused currently. So there are people here who have family here, who've lived here, as I said, longer than I have, for years and years, and are homeless through no fault of their own, except that they may have mental health issues or addiction issues that haven't been treated, haven't been successfully addressed, and they find themselves homeless. We do, last year over the summer, I think everybody in Astoria noticed that we did have an influx of people camping out, younger people who were living on the Riverwalk, that sort of thing. It's almost like tourist homelessness kind of thing, but in a way, that is natural. People are coming out of the valley to get out to the coast, the climate kind of thing, to try to survive. But they were a little bit more aggressive in their panhandling, and we were getting complaints at the city. And we were even getting complaints from some of our local homeless people who were saying, those out-of-towners are giving us a bad name. So it was very difficult. It's like it's not easy for anybody. But when people get aggressive with the panhandling, it really creates a bad impression and sours the public on wanting to provide the needed services for our homeless, you know, residents. Mm-hmm. That sounds a contradiction, homeless residents, but they are living here and they are homeless.
Yeah, absolutely. We know there's a connection between, I guess what I'm kind of wondering is sometimes you'll hear people say, well, Some people like to be homeless. Some people choose that lifestyle. What do you think about that? What have you found in your experience?
I don't think any person, I've never heard of a person, I can't imagine anyone graduating from high school and saying, I want to be homeless when I grow up. That's my goal in life, is to be homeless. I want to live in a tent out in the forest and have to scramble for food and be afraid of being beaten up while I'm sleeping, that sort of thing. That's what I, on my aptitude test, that's what I scored highest from, that kind of thing. There are people who have been so damaged that they can no longer cope with the structure of daily life as we have created it, the 9-to-5 job or that sort of thing. Some of them are veterans, some of them are just dealing with various issues where they would say, no, I can't do that. I would rather stay out in the woods. If you want to call that a choice, you can. But to me, that's not a choice, a free choice, because they cannot deal with the environment anymore that we've created. And a lot of people, I think, if you've been following, there's a rise in suicides in the United States in an age group, in a demographic, white people between, I'm not sure if it's 35 and 55 or what. People are really puzzled about that, but I think what's happening is we've created so much stress in trying to survive under capitalism, in this laissez-faire capitalism that basically is saying if you don't work, you can starve. You can be homeless and starve because that's how the system operates. People are terrified. We don't have that social contract anymore. And so when we see that demographic committing suicide at an alarming rate, I think we have to say, no, there's something fundamentally wrong with the system, and we can't say, oh, people just choose to be homeless. That's giving ourselves way too easy an out.
You know, you mentioned suicide, and what comes to mind for me that something that I follow closely is the impact on veterans. And, you know, the number 22 a day is talked about a lot. 22 veterans a day are ending their lives because of the lack of support and just sort of the impact, the consequence of war and lack of services or incompetent services or lack of information and the way that information is disseminated. People don't know how to access the services even if they are there sometimes. And do you see a lot of that here in terms of veterans accessing services or veterans in homelessness? What do you think about that in our community?
Yeah, a number of our guests are veterans. The first year, we tried to track just the numbers. The second year, we realized we try not to be intrusive. We don't pretend to be social workers. We don't do a big intake interview kind of thing, even though that would be very valuable. It seems wrong for us to say, well, before you can lie down on the pad and sleep, you're going to have to tell us your life story. We just want to get them in. But this last year, we started asking them if they were veterans. And I think we served 15 veterans this last winter kind of thing. So, and most of those are basically residents here, not people passing through. And we take people, we send them to war, we damage them, we bring them back, and we don't heal them. We basically throw them away. And that's not a criticism of the Veterans Administration. That's just basically we don't fund the returning soldiers as much as we like to fund the war machine, basically. You know, there it is. There's profit in armament and military equipment, that sort of thing, but there's no profit in veterans. And it's obscene, basically. We should not do that to people. Whether or not you believe in such a large military and a large military budget, some of that budget should absolutely be spent on veteran services, and not enough is.
Yes, of course, we would love to end, many of us would love to see an end to war and an end to, you know, the military in some cases. But regardless, you know, radical acceptance tells us that we have to accept what is reality. And the reality is that we have a lot of veterans in need of services that they're not getting. And we need to find, we have a responsibility as a, you know, a nation and community members to try to find ways to serve people who have served their country. I'm wondering about if you could tell us a little bit about sort of the details of the warming shelter. When does it start? Is it happening right now? Because my understanding is that it happens in the winter when the weather there's certain sort of qualifications for when it's open and when it's not. But I also know that you're doing some shower time,
yes,
too.
Yes.
Tell me a little.
Well, because we were fortunate enough to get a shower installed this last winter, and it was due in large part to James Coughlin. He was a local person who, a retired contractor, who donated all his time and effort, and he supervised that project. He did the design, did a lot of the construction, helped us negotiate with local, like Terry's Plumbing and some others, who gave us a discount for charity kind of thing. And then a donor from First United Methodist Church who stepped up and said, I will pay whatever you're not able to raise funds for. So through the hard work and generosity of some local people, we got a shower there. And it was a big boon to our homeless guests kind of thing. And we realized that once we closed down in the middle of March, it was stupid to let that shower sit there unused because they still need, you know, that hygiene kind of thing. So the church agreed to let us open the shower once a week. So on Thursdays from 1 to 3 p.m., we have that shower open that people can come. There's the double door on 11th Street between Exchange and Franklin. And we provide showers, and we can do some laundry for people as well. So we're keeping the shower open one day a week, year-round. We'd love to do more, but again, it's all volunteer basis, and it's hard to do that. We did it on a weekday because in the weekends we didn't want to interfere with church activities kind of thing. And we did it during the daytime because some of our homeless guests told us that once it gets dark, they prefer to get to their places. They don't want to be roaming around kind of thing. So we're doing it on Thursdays from 1 to 3 p.m. and it's open to anybody who needs a shower.
And is that ongoing through the summer?
Yes. As long as we can keep volunteers there to be there, it's going to be ongoing.
And what's the address again?
It's we got an address. It's 557 11th Street.
Okay.
If people want to look that up. But essentially, First United Methodist Church faces south. It faces Franklin, and we're on the east side of the building. There are double doors on 11th Street. You really can't miss it. And so inside the double doors, straight in, is where we're doing the shower. And that's also the entrance to the social hall where we do the warming center. And the warming center, the first winter we started, which was the winter of 2014, as I mentioned, we had some holdups with getting permits and permissions, that sort of thing. So we weren't able to start until after Christmas. That winter, we had a very cold spell right around Thanksgiving. And it was very troubling for us, knowing that we were trying to get open and we weren't there. So we decided that we would open November 15th through March 15th. And those are arbitrary dates, but we had to pick some dates kind of thing. So those were the dates we prepared to open this last winter. And I was happy to say that we got it because there was another cold snap right around Thanksgiving and we were able to open for that. So our trigger this last winter was when the temperature is predicted to fall below 40 degrees or we're having severe weather conditions like the heavy rains that a store is prone to. We open from 8 p.m. to 8 a.m. And I have to say, even though people consider a store a fairly temperate climate, not being able to dry your clothing, walking around in wet clothing when the temperature is around 40 degrees can be, on a long-term basis, as damaging to your health as freezing temperatures. That's another thing that our homeless guests taught us, is that people can donate a coat, but once that coat gets wet, it is absolutely useless to them. And that's why sometimes you will see things thrown away, because if you can't dry your clothing, why carry around wet clothing kind of thing? And I thought, wow, I didn't even think about that. That's where another having a locker to keep your stuff dry would be a huge benefit. But unless they have tarps and that sort of thing, so much of their effort is in the winter months is based around keeping their possessions dry, because once they get wet, unless they save up, if they recycle some bottles or cans and can go to a laundromat and dry their sleeping bag and their jacket, it's very bad.
Yeah, and I think many of us take it for granted that if we are outside and we don't want to be outside anymore for whatever reason, whether we're cold or hot or just tired of being outside, mm-hmm. we can go inside. And even we could step into a coffee shop or a bookstore, and most of us don't have to worry about being stigmatized because we're carrying all of our belongings with us or we haven't had a shower for a few days, whereas someone affected by homelessness doesn't have that privilege. And so we can expect the warming center to open up again this around November.
Yes.
When the weather starts to change.
Yes.
And where do people get more information if they're interested? Because you said you're all volunteer run. Is that
yes.
still correct?
Yes. Yeah.
And so where do people get more if they're interested in volunteering or donating or just finding out what they might be able to help with? Where do they contact you?
Well, they would probably just have to contact me and I can give you my phone number and email address. Also, we have a Facebook page, Astoria Warming Center, if people want to like that, and then they can message me there and I'll get back to them. So that's Astoria Warming Center on Facebook. And should I just give my phone number and email address? All right. So my phone number is 503-325-1895. That's 325-1895. And my email is drewherzig@yahoo.com. That's drewherzig@yahoo.com. And we currently we're, you know, just doing the shower on Thursdays, but as we get closer to the winter months, we will be doing volunteer training and we'll be trying to find more people who'd like to sign up, because being open overnight, 12-hour things, we have three-hour shifts. We always have two volunteers on duty so that nobody ever feels alone. So that means we have like eight people minimum per night that we operate. So we need lots of volunteers. And it's very, most of the people who have done it feel it's, find it's incredibly rewarding.
Very powerless situation, which is why the work, you know, one of the reasons why the work that you're doing is so important, Drew, because if you are busy just trying to survive, you don't have time to, you know, lobby Congress and build a voice for yourself and have a lot of power. You don't have a lot of money. You're not able to create the structures that are going to give you power and freedom. And so then it's just a continual cycle. And so people who do have power, privilege, and freedom need to step up to assist in this problem. Otherwise, it's just going to continue to grow.
Absolutely. And I feel you mentioned radical acceptance. I think we need to think in terms of radical equality, too, that could be us, that we are absolutely the same. And it does happen to people. They suddenly find themselves homeless, sleeping in their car. We had some people, it was like their first few nights of being homeless, and they were absolutely panic-stricken kind of thing. And so it's we're doing it for ourselves, our greater community, just as much as for any individual, because our whole community benefits when we take care of each other. In whatever way it happens, we all gain by being better to each other.
Absolutely. Well, Drew, we are out of time. Is there any last thought that you wanted to share? Or
We talked a little bit about capitalism. In the United Nations Declaration of Human Rights, it says that everyone has a right to food, shelter, and clothing. As a country, we still don't seem to believe that. And if we could just believe that, we would find better ways to deal with this. Every human being has a right to food, shelter, and clothing, whether they earn it or not, just being a human being. If we could take that as our starting point, we would actually, the studies show that we would save money by creating housing situations for people instead of sending them to jail and emergency rooms and picking them up off the streets. Get them indoors, give them food, shelter, and clothing as a right. And then we could make so much more progress.
There you go. Thank you, Drew, for being on Mad Coast Radio.
My pleasure.
You've been listening to Mad Coast Radio on Coast Community Radio. Now, please join me in sending out love vibes of strength and support to all those suffering and doing their best to keep on keeping on. You are not alone. Veterans, we see you. We support you. Getting help is always an act of courage. If you or someone you know is feeling hopeless, not sure where to turn, thinking about suicide, please, please call 1-800-273-8255. That's 1-800-273-TALK. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, there's someone there to pick up the phone. This is your host, Susie DeKnight. Thank you for joining me today. Be well.